This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this. Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Foul Play by the Robert Cray Band. Their great 1986 album, Strong Persuader, in honor of the Grizzlies' Foul Fest in the fourth quarter last night.
So, read Drew Hill's piece on this. Obviously watched this with my own eyeballs and heard some of the comments afterwards. And the Grizzlies were did not think there was fair play, Chris. It was the foul disparity was 44-14 in the fourth quarter. It was 26-3. Your thoughts on, start with the officials.
The most boring discourse in all of basketball is free throw disparity, like it really is.
There's other boring discourses, but okay, yes.
I think that is the single most boring discourse in all of basketball, is looking at the box score and saying, how did this team have been, you know, whatever. Yeah. The Grizzlies fouled a lot. Like if you want to go through play-by-play, you could definitely find fouls called in the Grizzlies that didn't necessarily have to be called. Like, I thought the replay review where they found the foul on Jaren, his hand was in there, but it wasn't like, you really got to Zapruder film that to determine that he grabbed and pulled and, like, whatever. And if you want to go the other way, you can find, like, calls the Grizzlies didn't get that they could have easily called. You can blow a whistle on every single possession of an NBA game if you want to. I mean, in any basketball game. If you want to blow a whistle, you can blow a whistle. You can find something to whistle. So, like, yeah, do I think it was a little out of balance? Probably so. But also the Grizzlies fouled a lot. And some of those were, like, intentional fouls. Some of those were good fouls, by the way. Like, Desmond Bane wrap it up, you know, Derek Lively sent him to the line. He misses a couple. But two fouls were that. One of those was, like, one of the dumbest fouls I've ever seen, was Marcus Smart, like, reaches in and fouls Luka Doncic when he's got his back turned 94 feet from the basket.
You're in the bonus. Like, that was unbelievable.
Yeah. That was, like, the dumbest foul I've ever seen in my life. And so, like, you know, that's not the official's fault on that one.
In terms of the fouling, I think the greater complaint would be the Grizzlies maybe should have had. It wasn't the 26, it was the 3. It was the 3. Like, there was one where Jaren was hammered.
Maybe so. But yeah. I am focused on the Grizzlies' offense falling apart for, like, a six-minute stretch and not being that good even after Ja came back and, like, stepping out of bounds, like, five times in the game. The Grizzlies should look in the mirror, not at the officials on that game.
They went 7.5 minutes without a bucket. Okay. Well, some other theories that we've kicked around. I think fundamentally a general lack of composure is the real reason and whatever else. We'll get to that. But some other theories that have been propounded that I want to bring up just to discuss. One is the minutes disparity. Now, the truth is your best players were in for the last 3:30. They were up by 8 and your best players were all there. But could have been more than 8. Like, it could have been a bigger lead. Ja played 31. Luka played 40. There are four Mavs who played more minutes than the highest minuted Grizz. Did the players' deployment and minutes deployment have anything to do with last night's game? As you move up against tougher competition.
Well, those are two separate things. Okay. Last night, you know, I think it's debatable, like, whether that was the right or wrong way to approach it. to the point that you've already made, like they had an 8-point lead or whatever when you brought guys back. There is this question of, you know, especially given the energy Jai's spending on defense now, like do you get a diminished Jai if you play him 38 instead of 30, right? Or same thing with Jaren. I think that's always been their thought on Jaren a little bit. I do think that – I think my biggest takeaway is not it was right or wrong, but that it is. Like, that game really illustrates right. This is what they're doing. Whether you like it or not, this is what they are doing. That it's a five – you just had a, took a 5-point loss at Dallas with Ja playing 31 and Luka playing 40. And that is what they're doing, for better or worse. That maybe they think in the long run that is more beneficial to them over time. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But my main takeaway is that is what they're doing. Until they stop doing it, and I do
is it
think
your
it's still notable.
Takeaway, do you think that would be also true in a playoff game? Like it is what
no,
they're like. That's
no,
a big
no.
regular season game. No,
no. If you look at over the past, Taylor Jenkins, like it's more this season, but he has always played his guys less. This has been a thing. Like John's never averaged 35 minutes; he's averaged 32. You know,
right.
And this is not a new thing. It's just more of a thing they've already done. And then in the playoffs, the guys do play more. So I do think there's that. But I do think there's a real question of you've got to get to the playoffs. You've got to get seeding. And could they be, even within the context of not wanting to play their guys heavy minutes, could you pick your spots a little bit more and lean in a little bit more every once in a while to get a win you're otherwise not going to get? That is my instinct. And last night, yeah, like they had the lead when Jai came back, and frankly, the offense sort of fell apart late. It was just called 12,
yep.
You know. But if you bring Jai back 2 minutes early during that stretch where you go like seven, eight, nine possessions in a row without scoring, does that change the outcome? I think maybe it does.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think maybe it does. All right. How about the theory that this was all on Marcus Smart? He was terrible. By the way,
well, he was
terrible. let me ask you, which was the worst Marcus Smart play? I will offer you the saving the inbounds, the bad save, the ridiculous foul that we discussed. John Martin brought up the three-pointer with when they were up, whatever, with 7 or 8 minutes to go, the ridiculous three-pointer he took, or the quitting on defense in the final minute.
Oh, I think it's the foul on Luka by far. That, to me, I can there is no rationale I can come up with that. I am less upset on the save the ball play. I think that his view of that play is not the same as our view watching television. And so, like, he sees Santi Aldama come out hard on a contested three, and Luka Doncic airballing a three. I think his flash assumption in the moment was that Santi tipped the ball.
Agree
and it was going out on Santi.
Yep.
So, like, did he need to step on the line? Like, it was poorly executed. But I understand his instinct in the moment from his vantage point on that play. That would be the least of the four to me that you bring up. The one that I think is most egregious is the foul on Luka.
Yeah, there is a rationale for trying to save that ball, and it's the one this is what I've been saying all show long. There, at least, I understand what he was thinking. On the Luka foul, I have no idea what he was thinking. That's preposterous. Chalk it up to one bad game.
I mean, for Marcus, and he'll have other bad games. I think, shout out to him for, like, really coming through after I write a column about how well he's been playing. Like, the column curse.
Yes, that was I was going to get to the jinx, Chris. You personally cost him this game last night with your column.
I mean, Marcus Smart is new to the Grizzlies. He's not new. And he's a guy who, like, has lots of good games and then has bad games, and he makes great sort of instinctive plays that you don't expect guys to make, and then he makes bonehead plays. Like, this has been talked to anybody who was a Boston fan.
Right.
Even the ones who love him will tell you this, you know. This is sort of part of the package. I do think for a guy who is the vet on the team and has the experience on the team, I do think it's a bad look. I don't know if bad look is the right way to put it. It is somewhat disconcerting to see him be the guy making the most bad plays in a tight game like that. Because you want him to be able... You want him to elevate the team in those kind of games, not drag the team down in those kind of games. So, like, that's only one game, but it is one game. Like, you know, note that and then go forward and see what happens going forward. But I think evaluating to the degree to which Marcus Smart helps or hurts you in exactly those kind of games is, I think, important for the team to evaluate over the next couple months.
Yeah. Yeah, he was brought in specifically for those to help you win those kind of games, and instead he dragged you down. How about the other thing that I do wonder is that we talked about this a little yesterday. Obviously, they've got star power in Luka and Kyrie, but their middle class, P.J. Washington, Dinwiddie, like, is pretty damn good and is certainly more tested and proven, it would seem, more experienced than, Marcus Smart's experience, but than the Grizzlies' middle class. Like, you're playing Scottie Pippen and Jay Huff and Jake LaRavia, and it's a, like, you said the Grizzlies might be deeper 11, 12 deep, but 8, 9 deep, Dallas is a better team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question for the Grizzlies is, you know, you got John, Jaren, and Dez, and then if you're in a, you know, playing 8 or 9 in a playoff series, who's the next, like, 5 or 6 guys? Over the course of the regular season, when you're getting down to 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, I think the Grizzlies, the Mavs are not, the bottom third of the Mavs roster is not good.
Right.
But the middle third's good. And then they have a superstar with Luka. And so, yeah, they put together a team that, you know, got to the finals, has a chance to do so again. The Grizzlies are trying to find that team. And the question for the Grizzlies is, are the components to that team on the roster now or not? And I don't think it's crystal clear either way on that. And that's part of what you're trying to discover. I think last night, more than anything, it was both encouraging and disappointing at the same time, mm-hmm. if that's possible. And I think it really represented sort of a new phase in the season, sort of entering a new phase, like here at the quarter point, where the first phase of the season was, okay, our stuff works, our roster's deep, the rookies can play, we're a good regular season basketball team. Like, we weren't last season was a disaster, that is in the past. We're back to being a team that wins. We're a good team again. But now it's, okay, we've got our guys back. Can this good regular season team be a real contender or a team that's ready for playoff basketball? I think that's really now the next step going forward is to try to hone what you have as a good regular season team into something more than that. And that was a game that you got some good things and bad things out of it. You're up 13. That game didn't become a hard fought, like high impact kind of game in the fourth quarter. It was that the whole way, I thought, more so than most of the games they played this season. And so, like, they were there for it, and then they just sort of fell apart in the fourth. And so you're going to have more games like that going forward, and I think they need more reps in those kind of games.
I think that's right. Jeffrey talked about, I mean, this game was significant. That's a team you will be competing against, presumably, in the upper reaches of the West. But he also looked at it as a test. And if you look at it as a test, it was weirdly both pass and fail, you know, because right. you 100% for three quarters looked like you were as good a team as Dallas, and then because of lack of composure or whatever it is, you fell apart. In terms of that next, the next stage of the season, they're okay. You know you're a good team. You know you got a bunch of players. You know you're deep. You know you also do. They do have a fair amount of sorting out yet to do. Like, I mean, yeah. A, with Marcus Smart, and then B, we've got the return of Zach Edey. You've got the return of Vince Williams. You've got the return of Gigi Jackson. In figuring out who the heck is going to play or be the significant pieces as they head into the playoffs is work that needs to be done.
Yeah, and I think you can take, you know, a couple months or more to sort, as long as you're winning enough along the way, which they've been doing. And so I don't think they have to decide today, this is our playoff rotation. You know, I think you can take the time to get there. And to right. I don't think they have to decide today, we have to make a trade for X player. I think to me, there's no urgency on that. You got 2 months until the trade deadline. I just think, you know, I think that's partly what's going to make the season interesting. But I don't think, you know, they have to make final determinations about all that stuff right now.
They also, by the way, it's interesting when you say this is who they are, the minutes deployment. You do wonder, as they step up in competition, if they will be open to learning there, too. Like, does it, in sorting out who's going to play, I do wonder how open they are to toggling that minutes thing going forward, depending on how games go against Boston or how games go.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I think if you start piling up, so they are the 14-8. They have top six unit offense and defense. That's great. They've done that with all kinds of injuries. They've only had their top three players together for a quarter of the season. All great. But you've done it against an easy schedule, and they are 2-5 in games decided by single digits. They are 0-4 in road games against good West teams. Like, I'm not talking about Portland, like teams that are playoff contenders. Well, four is not that many games,
right?
But like, they're going to keep accumulating. And so if you start stacking up games where like you're losing by 8 and John Morant plays 30 minutes and like the best player of the other team plays 40, like pressure's going to build on that. And so just because that is what they are doing doesn't mean that is what they will continue doing no matter what. I think it bears watching.
Yeah. Grizzlies eliminated from cup competition, as were, by the way, the Celtics and Cavs. And so they pick up games. You can't just sweep the Grizzlies and expect to get away with it. They get Brooklyn another shot at Brooklyn, and they get that's a home game against the Nets, and then they travel to Los Angeles for the Lakers. You fine with picking up those two? Yeah, well, it is.
Yeah, no, I think revenge game. Brooklyn coming back to our house for a revenge game. That sounds good. And, like, yeah, maybe, you know, they lost that game at L.A. too. And so, sure, let's go beat up on the Lakers. That fraud of a team.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Arrington from the Daily Memphian. Subscribes to my jinx theory. He jinxed Marcus Smart. And subscribes to my argument that the worst play that Marcus Smart committed last night was the foul, not the save. I feel vindicated, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. 100% vindicated by that. We don't have Sam Hardiman today because, get this, he's busy. Of all the feeble excuses. No, we appreciate Sam coming on every Wednesday. We don't have Sam this week, but we have other matters to discuss. We will do that when we return. Before then, I will tell you, it is cold outside. No better time to get to Oak Hall and buy some luxury. So get a cashmere vest. They have a huge array of vests at Oak Hall. Peter Millar, Barber, Steo, just to mention a few. They've got a tremendous selection of sweaters, hoodies, five-pocket corduroys from Brax, Peter Millar. And as I've said, it is the place where I shop in Memphis that is most like a shopping experience is supposed to be, particularly holiday shopping. I mean, they're incredibly helpful. They will make sure you get exactly what you need. Honestly, a gift card, not a bad idea either. They have the people who do the alterations are right there on site. Alterations are free. The wrapping is spectacular. It is shopping the way it is meant to be. No better place than the holiday season for Oak Hall. Back in a moment is Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It is the biggest season to get engaged, and Robert Irwin Jewelers is the number one place to buy a diamond engagement ring. Fabulous shopping experience at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Ask Jeffrey, ask Connor, both got engaged, heading over to Robert Irwin Jewelers and saying, walk me through this. Let's do this. Bigger, brighter diamonds and better prices, which is what you want. Bigger, better diamonds and better prices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They've been at it for nearly 50 years in Memphis, which should give you some confidence, a sense of how embedded in the community they are at Robert Irwin Jewelers. And then they have things like the meant to be guarantee, whereby if you buy your diamond engagement ring from Robert Irwin Jewelers, 365 day, no questions asked return policy. That is the meant to be guarantee. Plus, jewelry spa service for life, that's free, which means stone tightening, buffing, polishing, etc. Free ring sizing for life, and great financing options. 24 months deferred interest or take up 60 months to pay at a low APR. It is Robert Irwin Jewelers. Locations all over town. I go to the one right across from Novel on Perkins Extended. Find the one closest to you or online at rijewelers.com. We were talking earlier, Jeffrey, about the playoff rankings last night. And here's the thing. You can say about every team, like people will say, if Alabama was left out, right? We don't believe now they will be. But if they were left out,
sure,
you could say, you lost to Oklahoma. You got killed by Oklahoma. Shut up, right?
Yeah.
Or you can say to Ole Miss, you lost to Kentucky at home. Shut up.
And you got a mulligan.
Right.
And lost to Florida.
And then you lost to Florida. And, yeah. But that is, here's the point. Whoever gets that 12th spot, you can say that about.
True.
They all have to, in the end, if they're left out, look at themselves and say, we could have been in. The problem is one of them is going to be in. One of them will not pay for their sins. And the team that will not pay for their sins, it feels like, will be Alabama.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
And that's what's the, yes, you can say that, you can look at Lane Kiffin and say, listen, man, you can't complain here. You lost to Florida, Kentucky, and an LSU game you shouldn't have lost to either. So just win one of those games and you're in. And that's true.
Yeah.
But Lane Kiffin can then look at Alabama and say, my God, they lost, they got crushed by Oklahoma and they lost to Vandy. Like, mm-hmm. Why are their sins absolved?
Correct.
But in this world, I also think if you're Ole Miss, you know you can't leave the it's an unfair world, so you can't leave the door open for them to pick Alabama, right?
Yes,
you did when you lost to Florida.
You left it up to the judges.
You left it up to the judges, and if you're Ole Miss, it's just the world is unfair. You can't. I actually think, in retrospect, when we look at this, what we will see is the most ridiculous part of this is gifting the seeding. I don't mind. I'm a little guy. I believe in the little guy. So I like the fact that five conference champions get automatic bids here, right? And that, whatever, Arizona State and Boise are both going to be in as conference champions. I don't like seeding them 3 and 4.
Yeah, I think... It's just a
travesty for everyone else in the tournament.
And
right?
I guess the argument against that is, well, it's not really Boise's fault. It's not really like,
it's not their fault. Like, it's the system, and I think they will change it.
Well, and I think the bigger problem is, like, hey man, like, a lot of these leagues, they didn't step up. Like, you know, like, it's designed to where that team typically is going to be. I think the bigger issue that I'm seeing is, you know, the Big 12 champion is going to be pretty mediocre.
That is true. That is true. You can also argue that the NFC South champion is going to be mediocre, right?
Yeah,
that's
but
the way
I think,
it works.
I think the key difference, though, is in the NFL, while we understand not everyone, no two schedules are the same, we do also fundamentally acknowledge, like, the schedules are close. In terms
yes,
of
the schedules are close, but someone's going to get in with. Whatever.
No, I mean, like, listen, the Saints had to go lose to a 7-9 Seahawks team in Seattle. Like, I like, you see it happen. I think the bigger issue that I kind of struggled with is, if this doesn't go a particular way, I think it's going to incentivize weaker scheduling.
How about this? What if SMU this week said, never mind, we're not going to play this weekend.
Ah, the Danny Cannell.
They just said, we're not going to play this weekend. They would be better off. Now, they wouldn't be, because they would be punished for not playing
Correct.
This weekend. They would not be. They would literally be disqualified. But they
They have an incentive to play. This is one of the revenue streams that they can get money for.
Well, that is true. But
so they
judge
television
right
money
now, out. Based on what they've done, they rank ahead of Alabama. It is only by dint of playing this extra game that they might be passed by Alabama. All right. Other matters, Jeffrey. This is not from the world of sports. Did you see what Oxford University Press's word of the year is?
I did not.
Okay, I'll give you the choices and you tell me what you think the word of the year is, okay? And the funny thing about this is they're not all individual words. Some are word combinations, okay?
So, some are phrases?
Some are phrases, yes. Lore, L-O-R-E.
Okay.
You're going to identify. I'm going to give
yeah,
you...
Yeah, I'm all right.
Six, and you're going to tell me I'm going to give you six, and you're going to tell me which one is the winner.
Okay. I assume demure is coming up.
Demure is, yes. Dynamic pricing.
Okay.
Lore is one.
Yep.
Dynamic pricing is one. Brain rot is one. Demure is one. And romantasy, romantasy. Lore, dynamic pricing, brain rot. Oh, did I say slop?
You did not say slop.
Slop.
I've already got my final answer.
Slop, demure, and romanticy.
I'm going to
okay,
say
what is it?
Brain rot, final answer.
You nailed it. What was your thinking?
So, demure was like a social media thing for like 2 days.
Well, it turns out all of these things are just whatever was big on, literally their words now, and maybe this is the way it works. Our language is shaped by social media. all of these words, when you look at the explanation, why is demure? Why is it on our short list?
Some girl was like, look at it. Like, it was like a
Jules LeBron is her name. I didn't know if it was her. We saw a big increase in usage of demure in August 2024 after Jules LeBron used the word in a short viral video on TikTok. LeBron's use of the phrase very demure, very mindful to refer to her clothing and makeup choices was picked up and widely repeated. I'm amazed you knew this. By users on the platform and in the media. That's what happened to demure.
This is also classic something that didn't happen during football season. Like, there's nothing going on. That thing takes off.
Okay, so why do you think brain rot took off, and why did you pick brain rot?
I just thought brain rot was...
Does sum up our year, doesn't
correct.
It? Brain rot was first used, honestly, Henry David Thoreau in Walden in 1854. So he was way ahead on the brain rot front. But brain rot has been widely used on social media this year, particularly on TikTok. And the term has become more prominent, increasing by 250% frequency per million words between 2003 and 2004. Slop. Slop. You know what slop is?
I mean, the stuff you feed pigs?
It's basically brain rot. Art, writing, or other content generated using artificial intelligence shared and distributed online in an indiscriminate or intrusive way and characterized as being of low quality, inauthentic, or inaccurate. Slop leads to brain rot, I think, is what happens there. I think that's the connection that we're looking for. Why is it on our short list? 332% increase in the use of slop. And so that is why it is used. Lore, why is lore? Why is lore on the short list?
Honestly, my first thought was because of Star Wars. There was the Acolyte show that came out. It was horrible. And one of the big complaints is it was ruining the lore.
Lore has been used in different ways. This kind of fits in different contexts. For example, they might talk about the lore surrounding a particular celebrity or a character in a book or film, or even refer to their own personal history as their lore. Online cultures and social media have seen the emergence of new kinds of celebrities and highly engaged fandoms, and the word has been applied more widely. So that's why lore made it. Do you even know what romanticy is?
I do not.
I don't either.
Is it a fantasy? Is it a combination of fantasy and romance?
Yes. It's a genre of fiction combining elements of romantic fiction and fantasy, typically featuring themes of magic, the supernatural, or adventure, alongside a central romantic storyline. That's what romanticy is, and it is sharply increased in use. But the number one word for 2024, ladies and gentlemen, you should be proud of yourselves, brain rot!
There we go.
Brain rot. Okay. Other matters that I did want to discuss, Stephen A. Smith is in contract negotiations. See this?
Yes, I have seen this.
Okay. I need you, since you're so smart,
okay,
rank these commentators on how much they make a year.
All right.
Okay. I just need you to put them in order.
All right.
Okay. Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, Tom Brady. This is for their work on the broadcast team, not other endorsements.
Right, you're talking their contract with their...
And Stephen A. And it's their package. It's not even just their contract. It's their package. And Stephen A. So Troy Aikman, Joe Buck, Tom Brady, and Stephen A.
All right. Brady is one.
Brady is one.
Yeah. He's like
37.5 million.
Troy is...
Oh, wait.
Uh-huh.
Peyton is, by the way, included only in this story, but only believed to be in a similar range as Brady. So I'm not including Peyton, but would you put him up there behind
Brady?
So I
think Peyton's company is paid similarly.
And it's a little tricky with some of these two. Did I say McAfee?
You did not.
Put McAfee in there, too. They have an estimate of how much, but again, it's kind of company. So McAfee, Aikman, Buck,
all right,
I'm pretty confident
on these.
Three of them are really close.
Brady's one.
Yep.
Troy is two.
Troy is two. $18 million a year.
Buck is three.
No, but that's because it's complicated. McAfee makes $17 million a year, but it's for his licensing his show, and then he pays the people on the program. So that's not the same.
It's like
whereas
Sirius,
Joe Buck makes $15 million a year.
It's like when Sirius announces that they're paying Howard Stern $100 million. Well, they're paying for the show.
That's exactly it. And then Stephen A's last, right? And that is true. Stephen A, right now, violence, please. Stephen A makes $12 million, $8 million in salary, $4 million for his production company. Then working our way up, it's Joe Buck at $15 million. That's pure salary. It's Pat McAfee at $17 million, but that's not pure salary. He's then got to pay the people on his program. Aikman at $18 million a year, and then Tom Brady at $37.5 million a year. And Peyton's up there for Omaha Productions or whatever it is. But Stephen A. is in contract negotiations and is said to be...
I heard 20.
20. 6 years, $20 million is the supposed negotiation point there. Do you think... Who's a difference maker?
This is what I've always struggled with Brady. Like, in the end, what do I care what he gets paid? Like, it doesn't...
Not at all.
I'm not in that universe. I would really like to know how someone is worth 30-some-odd million dollars for 20 events a year.
But also...
I mean, the argument they would say is, you don't understand, he helps us close ad deals, he gives us a face, whatnot, but it's like... I don't know,
well,
man.
To me, my question, just that would be the argument, because in terms of watching the game, I'm going to watch the game depending on who's playing.
100%.
And so it is true for Buck, it is true for Aikman, it is true for Brady, it's true for all of them. I'm watching the game. I might have an opinion on who I prefer or don't prefer, but I don't really care. It doesn't, to me, drive viewerships. Whereas the Manning cast... That they created something.
Correct.
They're watching something that, like, you're watching and would not be otherwise. And Stephen A., you may hate him all you want, but he's not calling a game that you would otherwise be watching anyway. He is having specific programming centered on Stephen A. He's not my cup of tea.
The guy works his ass off.
He clearly works his ass off.
Like, I'm with you. Like, do I love his delivery? Do I love, like, the gimmick? No. Do I totally and utterly respect what that guy does? Yes, I do. Like, he works.
I respect his work ethic.
Correct.
I don't really have much regard for the work itself.
So, weirdly, the ones, Buck and Aikman, I don't really have that big of a problem with. Not from their body of work. I just am easily able to understand that
one. Well, and some of it's also
ESPN was trying to put Monday Night Football back into the Super Bowl rotation.
100%.
And so they had to go
ahead and get them.
Correct.
And there's also, if you are the Cadillac, like if this is what they make, you know, this is what someone in this position makes. It's representing your network. It's all of that. You don't chintz out on them, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the call. Like, it's like, in the end, I also think the NFL was fairly instrumental in that. I think the NFL has dictated a lot of shots to ESPN. Like, what if you did this?
All right. Anyway, good for Stephen A. It's going to be a happy holidays. There'll be something under the tree there for Stephen A. We do have NFL news. This is going to come as a shock. Trevor Lawrence is in the concussion protocol. Yeah.
You don't say.
Yeah, you don't say. We also have the mock draft that I referenced earlier. This is over at The Athletic. Interesting. One scout says that Travis Hunter is the only guy this year who would have been a top 10 pick last year. I don't necessarily believe that, because I think Shador Sanders would have been, right? I think quarterbacks, because they're elevated, necessarily will be, but it shows what kind of draft we're dealing with here.
You could talk me into that, because in the end, Penix went 8, and I think Penix is better,
than
Shador.
Yeah, that may be. So in this mock draft, Travis Hunter goes 1 to the Jags, and then Cam Ward.
Do we think the Jags will keep the pick? My guess
No. Well, it depends on what.
I mean, listen,
offering.
I believe in the Giants. We can get this done.
If there is a quarterback, let's say the Giants are picking third, and they have a quarterback that they like, and they think the Raiders right now in this draft, they're picking third, and the Raiders are picking second. If they have to give up a 1 and a future 1 in order to go up and get a quarterback from Jacksonville, I mean, then they would. And then Jacksonville would take it. They'd slide down to 3. They'd have a future 1, and hell,
they'd probably get the person that they would have number 1 on the board.
Anyway, because the first two teams need quarterbacks. So
correct.
It'll all be driven by quarterbacks at the top of the draft. Here it's Travis Hunter 1, Cam Ward 2, Shedeur Sanders 3, and then honestly a bunch of guys who, unless you follow college football closely, you've never heard of. Like Will Campbell is a character and a well-known, if you follow LSU or SEC,
like
he's
right?
He's a probably a guard in the NFL. But so you know him, Abdul Carter is the edge guy.
Top 10 guard. How does that make you hit the other field?
And then it just feels like there's always like an edge rusher from Penn State.
Yep.
There was last year. It was Chop.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's Abdul Carter. There feels like there's always a edge rusher from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
This year it's Jalen Walker, sixth. But also Michael Williams, 7, also from Georgia. We talked about the Michigan, how stupid Ohio State was to just try to run it down the throat. There's Mason Graham, defensive tackle from Michigan, going
8. Let's run right at him.
Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We'll move him.
Is there another quarterback in the first round? I don't actually think so.
So my buddy Will has been all over this. And over at FanDuel, they're offering Carson Beck at 90-1 to be the first quarterback taken. To be clear, it's unlikely. I do not think, though, this is an insane bet based on what the odds that you're getting. Milroe has like 18-1.
Right.
Milroe's not going in the first round. Let's be very clear on that. Here would be the case for Carson Beck. If the Giants wind up picking one, which I believe in, I think there is a better than average chance that Beck could have a very good playoff. Because he has consistently been playing better, really basically since the Tennessee game. And he could have the big playoffs. And on top of that, you don't have to deal with Deion talking about Shedeur playing in the cold weather, whatnot. So you take the fallback. And I think it's entirely possible Beck becomes the guy.
I don't hate it.
Because also with Cam.
Certainly in the top 10.
Cam's small. Like, and I'm a defender of all.
He's small and he's reckless. Now, he does have a bigger arm than Shedeur, though.
He has a bigger arm, and I also think he has a, in general, a more accurate arm. But I think Beck, I'm just not in this camp that Beck is all of Georgia's problems. Like, he has not played well, but he's not all of their problems. And if he goes and he has a big playoffs, we could see him moving up boards. And I also think, like, he is the guy that. Like, he's got the prototypical size. He is accurate with the ball. Like, he's
good. Big games. If he plays well, I can see it. It is also signing day in college football.
Is it?
Used to be something, sort of, maybe, kind of. Used to be in February. It was a big day. Now it is not. What?
If a tree falls in the forest.
Yeah. So, but anyway, you'll hear names that
sure.
Portal stuff is going on as well.
Like, well, we're pre-portal.
You see, there's an offensive lineman from Tennessee who just announced that he's going in
so
the portal.
So here's where we are in the portal, because I have at least gotten up to speed on this.
Uh-huh.
Grad transfers can portal right now, and players that are not graduates. Can announce
you're in the portal, but you can't be
correct. But you're not
out of the portal.
You're technically not portaling yet,
right?
You intend
you're saying I'm entering
correct.
The portal.
You're engaged to portaling.
Okay. Can you discuss with other teams?
I do not think so because of the rules.
So, Memphis Tigers.
By the way, as we know, that are abided by.
We were talking about trauma and Memphis teams and which one where there's more trauma attached to, and we all agree that Memphis basketball has the most trauma.
Isn't it also an unfair question? Like, I think it's going to be geared towards
big games and
correct.
And I think that's right. They've been around longer.
Exactly.
Like, a lot of the trauma happened before the Grizzlies existed.
Yes.
Although there's been a fair amount since
the
Grizzlies.
Well, like the thing with Grizzlies, like in the end, most of it all comes from the postseason.
It's just injury. But well, it's injury.
Like, and there's 7-game series. So even if you have a game that you think about, like the double overtime game we were talking about yesterday in 2011, even if like you find yourself thinking about it, there were still other opportunities to win the series. Whereas
the trauma for Grizzlies is 100% injury last year. That's where the trauma is. But anyway, so Tiger football team yesterday, it was announced that seven of their players are first team all AAC. 10 honored overall, which is the biggest number. The problem is this gets to the dilemma that Memphis football is in now. Everything is two sides of a coin. Like, is that great or is that an indictment that they didn't win the damn conference? What? They got seven first teamers that they couldn't even get to the conference championship game? Or is it, look at that. That's a hell of a team they assembled over there.
That?
They got seven first teamers. Good for them. This is a, that's a guy, well, that's a program that's getting it done. No, he 100% put it together.
No, I think with Silverfield,
it's just a problem because everything is pick a side.
When I was covering Ole Miss, we've reached Andy Kennedy, the Andy Kennedy zone, where you get enough good that you can make the case for, and you got enough against that you can make the case
and
against.
And here, the good and bad is the same thing.
Correct. Well, it's the same thing.
Like interpreted as good or bad?
Well, it's like with Andy, it was like, he's always a bubble team. And I would scream from the rooftops, do you realize the talent disadvantage he has?
He is always a bubble team. Yes,
correct.
Right. That is
it's
a good
like,
team.
That's a good thing. Like, he is maximizing that, but it works both ways.
And then finally, did you hear, it doesn't sound like this is imminent, but do you have an opinion, and are you aware of the golden at-bat?
Yes, I do have an opinion. And
Tell the people what the golden at-bat is.
So the golden at-bat is something that Sounds
great, by the way. It's they got a great name. You got to say, as a branding exercise, the golden at-bat.
Doesn't it kind of sound like a 007, like, spinoff?
Maybe it sounds more like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
The golden ticket.
A Ronald Dahl.
Right?
Roll Dahl. Special.
Yeah.
So the golden at-bat is something that Rob Manfred kicked around on a podcast with John Oran now of Puck. And the basic...
Did he kick it around or it's baseball? He tossed it around.
That's a good point.
He tossed it around.
Yep. Tossed around. Fair. Objection abstained. Essentially, at any one point in time during the game,
ta-da!
You can declare your best hitter goes to the plate.
This is now the golden at-bat.
And I, for someone who's kind of, what I would consider a baseball traditionalist, I have been cool with most of the new things. Like, I've been fine with it.
Yeah.
This one, absolutely not. This completely goes against the integrity of the game. The batting order is part of the game. And then also, we don't know what's going to happen.
Is it a bigger offense to the integrity of the game than a pinch hitter?
Not a pinch hitter, than
the designated hitter. Designated hitter means you can literally have a guy who just bats and doesn't know how to play baseball.
Yeah, but he's in the lineup.
Before you had invented the designated hitter, he wouldn't have been in the lineup. There's no question. It's too damn gimmickly.
Let's be real. This is something the NBA would do. This is just such an Adam Silver move.
I also don't understand how it works. In other words, if Aaron Judge is batting fourth,
what if you just got out?
Does he get to bat first and also fourth?
Well, my deal is, like, what happens if you sit there and go, like, Aaron Judge is the perfect example. Don't you want Aaron Judge, if he gets out, don't you want him to get another crack at it? Can you just get back-to-back at bats?
Well, that's the thing. Can you just deploy him anytime, twice in a row? Right.
This is the classic, like...
I do like the name.
The thing, though, I'm always woke on these things where they throw this stuff out because they actually have something else that they want. They kick around an idea that everyone's like, this is a horrible idea.
Over at FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, right now new customers get $150 in bonus bets if you win on your first measly $5 bet. That's right. FanDuel Sportsbook app gives you everything you need to place live bets on the NFL all in one place. Get a hunch in the middle of the game. Check out the latest stats. View live play-by-play and visit all that on the same page. Basically, you can just log in there. It's all on the same page. Stats, play-by-play, all of it. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. And again, first $5 bet wins, you get $150 in bonus bets. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789. What's next on 92.9?
Jeff Pierce, what's coming up next on Jason and John? Coach Hurd will join them 1:25. Cerrito will be with me today. CJ Hurt joins us during hour number two. It is Wednesday, so we'll have George and Connor still holding the fort down for Gabe.
Try to avoid the slop, which can cause brain rot.
Yep.
At least that's the current lore. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Our work here is done.